Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello one and all, and welcome to After the Checkered Flag, our F1 special series here on the Behind the Glass podcast. I am one of your hosts, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and alongside me, permanent co-host, Paul Wallace from Supercars of London.
I've now signed the contract, ladies and gentlemen.
We are back!
I'm so excited. I also don't think it's after the checkered flag, considering it's before the lights out.
Well, this particular episode, you're right. The name of this series doesn't quite befit what we're going to be discussing.
Although, did they wave a checkered flag after testing?
Probably. Let's just assume they did. Yeah. So, if you don't know, because we actually have gained on this channel quite a few subscribers since After Checkered Flag ended at the end of last year. This is just an excuse for Paul and I to nerd out about Formula One, because we're big Formula One fans and we spend most of the week discussing Formula One, or at least after the race discussing Formula One, we thought, why not put it onto a podcast?
So, absolutely.
Throughout the year, we will be sitting down to reflect upon, review, analyse each race of the 2022 F1 season.
Give our non-expert opinion.
We must clarify, we are not experts.
To new subscribers, Sam has driven a Formula One car. And he does like to talk about it quite a lot. But that is the only connotation that we have to what the guys in the cars actually experience.
Yeah, the only reference.
That we like to give our opinion on what we would have done differently.
Yeah. And important to know that we are quite biased. We are Lewis Hamilton fans, but we also support lots of other teams and drivers. People sometimes get upset that we're sometimes a bit too biased towards Lewis. I think this year we're going to try our best to, you know...
To not
be too blinkered. Our support. But yeah, it's very exciting because, of course, we've got an entirely new season ahead of us with all new regulations and potentially an entirely new pecking order.
Well, I mean, let's first say that we've got a brand new car.
Cars.
Well, yes, there are 20 of them, but they look completely different. And watching them go around testing, it kind of reminded me of that jump between PlayStation 4 and then buying PlayStation 5 and playing.
I haven't done that yet, but it's good to know.
But just getting this all new look that immediately dates the cars from last season.
So weird, isn't
it? It's nuts to watch highlights or to see clips from last season, having watched the new cars go round at Bahrain. It now just makes you realise, well, they look a little bit rubbish.
Yeah, well, we've moved forward so quickly. And actually, it's a perfect opportunity to quickly touch upon Drive to Survive. So before we get into our 2022 predictions and reviewing testing and, well, yeah, analysing what might be ahead before the first race of the year, let's touch upon last year and how it was summarised on the ever-popular Drive to Survive.
The Netflix special.
So is this season 4 of Drive to... I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
season 4 of Drive to Survive. And look, I think a lot of you listening will be existing Formula One fans, but you may be new to the sport thanks to Drive to Survive. Mm. You know, those of us who have watched the sport for a while, or at least pre-Drive to Survive, you know, we can sometimes be precious about it. But fundamentally, it's helped to bring a lot of attention to the sport. And realistically, last year was so special and controversial and incredible because I think a lot more people were watching it and talking about it and invested in it. So for that, bravo, Drive to Survive.
Do I clap as well?
Up to you. Okay. But But I've seen some interesting comments about this latest season, and I want to hear your thoughts, and I'm going to give you a kind of a suggestion, a thought or conspiracy as to why maybe some of the reaction...
A conspiracy this early on. This early on. I can't wait.
So come on, what have you? Did you watch any of it, most of it?
I'll talk about what I did watch.
Okay.
And that will give you an idea of my perception on it. But first, I think it is important to say that, yes, the gates open and the floods coming through the gates to Formula One as a sport through Netflix is exciting. And I know that there are a lot of people that maybe be tuning into this podcast, having watched Drive to Survive, and are looking forward to this season. I watched the entire first episode, kind of enjoyed it. Thought it was quite cool. Nice way to set up the year, because also it was a long time ago. I was kind of just refreshing my brain. Everything that happened leading up to Abu Dhabi is still quite fresh and still a little bit hurtful. But then I watched about 10 minutes of episode 2, got bored, skipped to episode 7, I think it is, to watch the build up to Abu Dhabi, because I wanted to see what was going on behind the scenes. I wanted to see footage we hadn't seen before of Toto, of Christian, of the team's debriefing, and Lewis talking about, oh, that's a little bit petty about Red Bull going after this part and then Mercedes. And then I just turned it off. That's what I wanted to see.
No, I, for me as a fan and as someone who watched 99% of the race coverage last year, the bits that I really enjoy from Drive to Survive are the kind of slightly natural behind the scenes moments, the drivers interacting, the little sort of, you know, as they get out of the car, you know, Danny Rick, I think with some of his struggles from McLaren at one point saying, oh, look, what's the fine if I just don't do media? Because I just don't want to talk to media right now. Those little insights, which we don't tend to get on TV coverage.
I think breaking down the barrier to what we're seeing on a race weekend from Sky Sports, let's say, just breaking down and seeing them as people.
For sure.
Is the best part about Drive to Survive.
I totally agree. Because the way they summarize the races in the season, if you're someone who has watched the races in the season, you're sort of, you can start to pick holes in some of the narratives and some of the footage doesn't quite add up. And look, it's made, well, for Hollywood in inverted commas, but to attract a new audience, it is sensationalized in lots of areas. And some of the drivers, especially Max Verstappen, come out and say, look, I'm not happy with how they represent me or the sport or this storyline. So yeah, it's not really, I don't think, for existing fans, apart from those small little funny moments. For example, I loved finding out that Toto Wolff is obsessed with really niche breads and egg styles. Like every episode, I saw this summarized quite well somewhere, saying that fundamentally what we found out about Horner and Wolff is that Horner tries to play it really cool. Like, I'm just a normal, cool guy. Like, I'm here for racing, but actually is riding around on horses and going clay pigeon shooting and in his helicopter. Whilst Toto Wolff comes across as like, you know, I don't care. I'm very laid back. I'm just here for the sport. But actually, can I have to pump a nickel bread? My poached egg slightly. Like every time he orders breakfast. Anyway, so those insights for me, I find amazing. I did the same as you. I think I probably watched 4 or 5 episodes. I forced myself because I knew we were going to talk about it today. I think, because I've seen on Twitter a lot of people saying, oh, I actually think this was the worst season of Drive to Survive, or actually, I'm not sure I've enjoyed Drive to Survive that much this year. I think that's because the actual F1 season last year was filled with so much real life drama that firstly, we all consumed it last year and we were exhausted by it by the end of the year, that turning that into a sort of a Netflix special was quite hard to do because it couldn't really live up to the actual drama.
Of watching it live.
Of watching it live and watching it unfold. And because of the way that they do it and the way they sort of shapeshift some of the situations, like for example, I saw someone tweet about this at Monza. You wouldn't have seen this.
No, I think I've seen the tweet.
So they basically made out that Verstappen won the sprint race.
Yeah.
Poor Bottas. You can see the onboard footage. Bottas is in front of him. They went, what up, Max? You won the peak one. So yeah, I mean, just, you know, interesting.
But imagine having never watched a Formula One race, but having in your Netflix subscription, logging on and then clicking and watching episode 1 of Drive to Survive and being, oh my God.
Absolutely.
Being opened up to this world that you never knew existed, or might not have wanted to watch a full race weekend because it is or can be quite monotonous, and watching the strategies or thinking about watching the strategies play out, just go and watch the Netflix series and get it all packaged up in what, 8 40-minute episodes?
Well, I can't remember the viewership for that final race in Abu Dhabi, but it was insane. I think actually viewership across the year, they did talk about record numbers, but it was, I think weirdly, it was a bit of a dip. Anyway, long story short.
Everyone was tuning into our podcast. Yeah. Probably.
We don't need to watch the races. Let's just
Those experts know what they're talking about.
But yeah, so fundamentally, I think you're right. It still remains a fantastic way to bring people into the sport. But I think once you're in, and if you decide to then start watching the races, when a season delivers like it did last year, you're a bit like, I don't need Drive to Survive. I'm getting everything I can, everything I want. And it was such an exciting season that, yeah, it was struggle. But you're right, if you didn't watch last year, you saw a few headlines here and there, to then sit down and watch Drive to Survive, you'll probably
blow your mind.
Oh my God, I'm definitely tuning into 2022, as we will be, because we have the potential for another jaw-dropping season, and we don't really know why at this point. You know, I mean, the last, what, 6 7 years?
You know exactly why. Ferrari look fast. Are we jumping straight in?
We'll come back to that.
Okay.
I don't want to get too overexcited, because that will be the rest.
Well,
of the
it sounds like you're going down that road.
The next 50 minutes, we'll just literally be going, Charles Leclerc. No. What I was trying to say is that we don't really know what's ahead of us. You know, the last 6 7 years, whilst there have been changes, whilst there have been small tweaks to the regulations, we've been fundamentally sure of the pecking order. You know, it's been Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull pretty consistently. Okay, Williams were there right at the start of the hybrid era, but pretty consistently those three teams have been competing for victories and really only recently for championships. So now we've got this kind of blank canvas where, sure, I think we're assuming that those three teams are still going to be at the top, but you never know. I still don't think anyone revealed their hand in testing.
Which I think is due to what happened at the end of last season. I think this year and what we saw or didn't see at testing is people being uber secretive because they've realized now that actually the game of chess starts way before testing. So having seen the development of the cars and what actually happened at the end of last season, I actually think every single team has gone into this to be like, we are not giving anyone a sniff of what we've been working on. Because every single team has been working on their car and the development of their car all through last season as well.
Oh, but even longer. Teams, you know, have been going out of this for a while, and teams have come out and said, you know, and addressed the fact that they've been working on some of these projects for a long time. And Red Bull were the clearest indicators of that at testing. Well, on the final day, in a shroud of secrecy, they waited as long as possible before finally pulling up the curtains and revealing this sort of new final design of their, or potentially final design of their side pod. And immediately the car goes out and is quick. So this is going to happen. It's going to be a huge development rate this race this year. If you go back to 2009 and 2014 and look at, you know, what teams are able to do throughout a season, how quickly they are to catch with each other and things like that. The winner of the first five races may not win the championship. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. But what we're going to try and do today is preempt or
predict
or analyze. I don't know what, but we're going to
not analyze. Okay. We're not experts. I'll be able to analyze the livery design.
That's an interesting thing to analyze. But yeah, we're going to go through the grid in reverse order, talk about the drivers, any new drivers, driver lineups, etc., the cars, and how we think those teams might do this year.
There are some rookies, right? Or rookies?
Rookie. Yeah.
There's some new drivers back on the grid.
Exactly. And then, of course, what is now going to become tradition, even though this is only the second year of After the Checkered Flag, we will be making our pre-season predictions as to champion in terms of driver and constructor. Right, should we get into it?
Let's get into it.
We'll start with Haas. Now, what an interesting pre-season Haas have had. I mean, sad for you, because I think at some point prior to Russia going insane and invading Ukraine, you wankers. Sorry, that's more aimed at Putin. You were begging for some Mazepin financial support this podcast.
Well, yeah, like I kind of went off that idea.
I'm glad that didn't work out, because we would currently not be active. But yeah, I'm just going to come out and say it. Thank God they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, probably took a year too long for old Mazepin to get out. I don't know what he's like on a personal level. He's never come across particularly well, apart from a couple of interviews. And I think his behavior and his reactions to losing this seat and Uraklai? The sponsor name being booted has has just shown his true colours. Yeah. And I think we're happy to be rid of that family from the sport.
Well said.
Thank you.
Is that rehearsed?
No, not really.
You are reading.
Passionate. No, I'm looking down to just remind myself if there's any other key points I should be mentioning. But it's left, you know, Haas in this slightly sort of unpredictable start of the year where we were say they were potentially losing money, they were losing a driver, we didn't really know what was going. But they ended up finishing pre-season testing like worryingly strong. Like everyone was like, what? What just happened? So, of course, drivers are Mick Schumacher and now the return Kevin Magnussen. No one saw that coming.
No.
I mean, when old Mazepin got the boot, I think people were like, oh, God, we're going to get Fittipaldi. Like,
I read those reports thinking, what a way to make the grid boring.
Oh, well, what a snore.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
And I think this really, I think the fact that they brought Magnussen back actually gives us a lot of hope for Haas. It suggests that they've realized they need the sort of the
experience,
thank you, the experience, the knowledge, the ability of a experienced driver like Kevin Magnussen, but also that maybe they've got a package there that could actually be utilized. You know, I saw another few hilarious tweets saying, you know, maybe what if last year Haas was a championship winning car because of two disastrous drivers. It would be a very good test for Schumacher now to go up such an experienced driver. I mean, what's your thoughts on Magnussen? Are you a Magnussen fan?
Do you know what? I feel like he delivered. I feel like he was a delivery driver for Haas in terms of the odd point here and there. And I think he's a much better teammate for Mick Schumacher because we all want Mick Schumacher to do well. We all want him to gain experience in a Formula One car. And I don't think having the two young drivers in that undrivable car last year really gave him any confidence. So I'm hoping that K-Mag can come back in. I think he's either coming back for two reasons. Either he believes in the car and he believes that he's still got it and he's almost coming back with a point to prove, or he's coming back for the money.
I don't think there'll be much money there.
I actually think it is point one.
Absolutely. And that kind of happened so quickly as well.
It excites me, given what we knew about Haas last year, saying they weren't going to develop the car for 2021 because we're putting all of our resources into the 2022 car to make that the most competitive package possible. Now throw an actual legit
podium scoring
experienced Formula One driver in. Who knows?
I think we'll probably come at the end and try and, you know, put the teams where we think they are before the first race. But I think Haas may have moved into a midfield position from being right at the back of the field, sort of Williams circa, 2019? You know, I think potentially taken a big step forward in their headline setting times were genuinely fast times from both Schumacher and Magnussen. So I would hope that they've got the potential to do some exciting stuff this year. And I'm really intrigued to see how Mick gets on with Kevin, because historically, Mick Schumacher's performed better in his second season than all the other categories. He's had that year under his belt driving a very difficult car. He's now in a more competitive car. And with a driver that we know, if he beats Magnussen consistently or on his level, we're all going to go, fair play. You know, I don't think Magnussen necessarily was ever
If he beats K-Mag, are you going to be championing him to jump in a Ferrari car already?
No, I don't
think. Too soon?
Well, also, we're going to come on to it, but Leclerc and Sainz, the holy package. Too soon. I don't think he's going to do any better going to Alfa Romeo, but I'll be shouting for Mick to keep progressing.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe Haas is going to keep moving back up the field. Who knows? So let's move on then. Williams, Latifi and the returning Albon.
Yeah.
I love Alex Albon. I
remember
Alex
his Albon. First few races when he got that Red Bull drive. He was lunging from positions that you just could not see.
He was so exciting.
He was a really exciting driver, and he was able to make those maneuvers stick. And I hope that him coming into Williams, he'll just make that car a little bit wider. And hopefully put on a little bit of a show, have some battles, and not just sit towards the back of the field and just run a race.
Hard to read Williams's testing program.
Car looked good though.
Well, visually.
Yeah,
visually, I think on track it does look good. It's a good solid livery. When it got revealed, I think a lot of people were like, and I was the same. I was like, is this going to work?
But better than what they've had.
Yeah, it looked good. And I think a new era for Williams, why not try a new livery? And so, yeah. it's, as I say, hard to read. I think they're probably still lower midfield.
I was going to say, I think they're still, as a team, a work in progress.
Yeah, a work in progress. Let's hope that the Albon can help push them, you know, up the field. You know, he did perform well at Toro Rosso. He did have that first amazing half a season at Red Bull, and then things started to go a little bit downhill. But hopefully a year out, a bit of confidence. He did very well over in DTM, wasn't it, that he was doing with Liam Lawson? Anyway,
he did
so...
I don't think he did a few things last season.
Excited to have him back. I would hope, and he needs to, destroy Latifi. But, as we may discuss further, some very interesting stats came out over the winter break, that Latifi was performing fairly well last year, and people may not have noticed it.
He really did get swept under the rug.
He was almost on a par with George Russell.
George is the golden boy, though.
Oh, we're going to come on to it, because I'm going to take that shine off that golden trophy. Anyway, so yeah, Williams, probably the one team that I'm really going to struggle to put in my pecking order in terms of where they sit. But, you know, hopefully a quiet preseason testing means a solid season ahead.
Yeah.
Alfa Romeo. Now, for me, this is the worrying sign, Alfa Romeo. They had a pretty horrendous test what do they call it? Shakedown.
Yeah.
And in Bahrain. Obviously, we've got Bottas making the big move away from Mercedes down the grid. And Guan Yu Zhou coming in, first Chinese Formula One driver. I don't know how to read them. Like, again, another pretty car.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that livery, but I'm a fan.
Yeah, yeah. But we were always a fan of Alfa Romeo. Yeah. The best thing about that car was watching in slow motion go around corners.
Beautiful thing. But just not a lot of problems, a lot of issues.
I feel like both drivers, and I'm giving Alfa Romeo a full-on zero expectation. Like, I could actually accept that they're just at the back of the field and just run a little bit like how Williams and Haas have over the last couple of years and just be like, oh yeah, like, they were once quite good with Kimi and Giovinazzi. But I don't know, like, I listened to the podcast that Bottas jumped on towards the end of last season, and it was a really interesting insight, obviously having the pressure of 1 year contract after 1 year contract at Mercedes, never knowing when he's going to get his seat renewed and always being on edge with Toto Wolff. Even though off the grid, they're incredibly close friends, Toto just dangled that carrot to try and get the best performance out of him. Now he's going to this team. It seems like he's going to be able to build a team and a car around him. And I think that's what he's most excited by with the project, which kind of then makes me believe that there really is a blank canvas slash zero expectation, shoving a rookie in a car and then having Bottas with the experience coming from Mercedes, trying to take a little bit of that knowledge into Alfa Romeo and kind of mix. Because can you imagine mixing a little bit of German engineering with Italian flair? Did I just sell Alfa Romeo?
You did. Don't forget, Sauber is still involved as well. So you've got to be Swiss, isn't it? Anyway, so the thing is, everything you say is kind of correct, but to me, that's a 3 to 5 year project. I mean, because let's face it, they weren't performing that strongly last year. Giovinazzi did pull out some stonker results at times, but they were not that strong last year. And then technically, mechanically, they don't look that sound coming into this year. Guan Yu Zhou, you know, he trains just here.
Really?
Literally on this site.
Is he there now?
Yeah.
Should we ask him?
He might be. No, he must be in Bahrain.
Oh, yeah, true.
He must be in Bahrain. So, Sam at King
Can we get him on the pod?
We could try.
Yeah.
He wanted to come and do some laps on the sim, but I was like, no, I've got the quickest time. So Granny Joe's been down here quite a few times.
What does he drive?
He drives a... that's Vips.
Stay on brand, Sam. He drives a Quadrifoglio.
No, I was going to say he drove a... McGowan when he's thinking, but that's Vips who does the Red Bull program. He came, I don't think he drives anything. He must have a
Uber.
Julia now.
He just Ubered.
I think he does have an Uber. Because I came in the other week, he was here.
No, he doesn't have an Uber, he just Ubers. He's not an Uber driver.
No, I never said he was an Uber driver.
Yeah, you said he had an Uber.
Oh, he got an Uber. But there was an old crappy Alfa Romeo parked in the car park, and I went and I said, don't tell me that's your company car. Yeah. Anyway, so hoping that he's going to pull out the results. I don't know. I don't have very high expectations for
exactly.
Alpha.
Just go in with zero expectations. You can't be disappointed at that point.
Okay, sure. Interesting. I think Bottas could be disappointed.
Yeah.
So another team that I've got a big question mark over, Aston Martin.
Mm.
So obviously we've got Vettel and Stroll back.
Was it Aston Martin that said they actually hadn't turned their car up over 40%?
Yeah. So essentially they had a very quiet pre-season, where everyone was going, they don't look particularly strong. The car looked like a little bit of a handful. But then they came out and said, basically, we decided to go against the usual grain. We did a completely different program to everyone else. And yeah, essentially, we've been running full fuel and at like half engine. Mm. Like, and everyone was like, oh shit. What?
Yeah. Because last year, they had a really slow start and then they just gave up, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was exactly it. Because the rule changes didn't suit them, they went in with all the confidence. Yeah, we're Aston Martin, we're here, we got Vettel. And then they were like, oh, we're really slow. And then yeah, halfway through, they were like, nah, scrap this.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I can't remember Lawrence Stroll's plan. I'm going to give you a Lawrence Stroll's Aston Martin F1 plan. Because I think he said, by 20, what's his voice?
I don't know. It's really deep and powerful. A voice that I absolutely cannot do.
Yeah, with a weird like, 2025. And he has a goal. He has some year where he's going to say, by this year,
we're going to be
competing for a championship.
I mean, you sound a little bit like Kermit.
I know. I do sound like Kermit. Stroll's Aston Martin master plan is on course. So look, I think this year they'll be aiming for sort of a fourth or a fifth in the championship, I would assume. But I mean, I just want a Vettel podium. That's all I want. I just want a Vettel podium.
I mean, I'd just want the fact that we have the Aston Martin brand on the grid, looking how they look, excites me and gets me.
Oh, the new livery is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has said that's the best looking car. I would say not, but it's up there.
It's up there. And it, to me, that's how an Aston Martin should look. Last year, they got a little bit wrong with, mm-hmm. their, with their livery, but this year, I think they've nailed it, brought in some AMR green. Mm. The base green is much better. Mm-hmm. The car, I think, as a non-expert, looks basic.
Okay.
So when I look at the car, I'm like, not impressed. Mm. Well, I look at a lot of other cars, I'm like, I mean, look at the Mercedes, look at the Red Bull, look at past the McLaren, you're like, whoa. The Aston Martin, I'm like,
looks kind of like...
But maybe they're about to turn up with a huge package to Bahrain. Who knows? But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I do like the fact that their team is now being run by Mike Crack.
Mm.
Mike Crack.
I did not know that.
Did you not know that?
No.
He used to be part of...
Can we call him Michael Crack?
Yes, I think he probably requested that. Yeah, I'm hoping, I'm hopeful because...
Absolutely. Aston Martin. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we need to get an Aston Martin cap down here somewhere. But yeah, we all want them to do well, but I think it'll be a tough-ish year, I think. I don't know. Well, let's see. AlphaTauri, Gasly and Tsunoda back. I have to say, a little bit of a star of Drive to Survive, Yuki Tsunoda. Have you seen that episode?
No.
Oh, the man's a maniac.
Really?
It's like having an annoying 15-year-old cousin
just in running
around in a TV show. Like, he literally like comes out of the loo. He's like, that was a good poo. Like, I'm not even joking. And he'll be like in a meeting, like in a press briefing, he'll be like, by the way, guys, I farted, so. And the best part is when he starts crashing loads, like firstly, he hears language on the radio. He's just like, beep, 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 beep. Like everything's a swear. He says the freaking C word. In the like, and they play it out. Drive stars, like, oh, I mean, I guess Ricardo said a few things.
Anyway, cover your ears, Vicky. Yeah,
long story short, he's got a dangerous mouth. And then they move him to Italy to, like, you know, get him to focus a bit more. And they want him to have a routine, and that's training every morning. He's like, I hate training.
Oh,
it's the worst thing in the world.
Like, I've seen it. Was it Abu Dhabi where they were like, right, we're going training now? And he's like, what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, he's in the morning somewhere, and he's just like, I can't do it anymore. I don't want to do this. And they're like, you got to apply yourself. He's like, no. So yeah, he was a secret star of Drive to Survive, I think, just mad. But yeah, I mean, we love AlphaTauri, don't we?
Because we love AlphaTauri. We love Gasly. We want him as much as we want Vettel in an Aston Martin to succeed. We want Gasly up there on the podium. We want to see him win. We're big champions of AlphaTauri and Gasly because they're kind of the unsung hero underneath the Red Bull that get all of the limelight.
So I think Marco came out, Helmut Marco, maybe Gasly came out saying that this year, at the end of this year, they will consider whether Gasly could move back up to Red Bull.
Really?
So this is the year, basically, because I think his contract ends at the end of this year.
Mm.
Perez signed a one-year extension, I'm pretty sure. So I think at the end of this year is when they'll decide. Now, for me, if I was Gasly's manager, I'd be like, nah, bruh.
Yeah.
Nah, they screwed you over.
Yeah.
And Verstappen, like, he's on a trajectory that is to the moon. Like,
have you seen his contract?
I mean, ridiculous. 50 million a year, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I wouldn't enter into that, Gasly. But if you're Pierre Gasly, and you don't have many other options, McLaren's all full up and Mercedes all full up, you know, all these things like that, and you're stuck in AlphaTauri, maybe you think, screw it, I'll take that Red Bull seat because maybe I could beat Verstappen. Maybe I'm confident enough to know that I could take him on. But I don't know. I'm hopeful for him, but I would love to see him end up going somewhere else to succeed.
I think I would agree with you. But what has he got to lose by taking that Red Bull seat again at the end of the year? Because surely he'll just go back into an AlphaTauri car and his
I think that's it.
Do you reckon?
I think if he goes to Red Bull and fails, flops, that's the end of his career. Because I think
it's a bigger ultimatum.
Because the suggestion is then both times he's been put into a race winning car, he can't deliver, he can't handle the pressure. Yeah. So any other big team's going to be like, no, he's a midfield runner. Yeah. He's good in a midfield team. And I think the midfield teams will be like, well, you've done it. That's what I would say.
That is a hard decision to make as an elite athlete. Do you accept the fact that you're never going to make it or take that last chance but risk your entire career on it?
But
stay tuned.
But I mean, I need to remind myself of contract lengths. You know, McLaren, let's see what happens with Danny Ric this year.
Mercedes,
Lewis Hamilton, he's not going to be around forever. He said it. So, you know, there are chances. You never, ever know. But I think for Gasly, I think he is set on getting that Red Bull seat back. I think
because he wants to prove everyone wrong.
Exactly. And probably Red Bull themselves. Again, a hard team to read performance wise from preseason testing. So let's wait.
Well, I mean, considering what we experienced at testing in 2021, when AlphaTauri were like, oh my God, this is the team to beat, and then had the season that they had, I don't even think there's any point in trying to guess where they're going to be.
But I think, as we described at the end of last year, I think AlphaTauri underperformed last year. I think that
pre-season
tasting.
Yeah.
Tasting?
What were they tasting?
Was genuine.
Sand.
I think they were the fourth or fifth fastest team last year and just had a slow start to the year and could never catch back up, essentially. So you're right. I mean, as always, we're making predictions off nothing. The most rogue and random preseason testing. I reckon.
You wait for my predictions.
Okay. So let's move on to Alpine then.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to come out and say it right now so I don't get made to look a fool off later on. I have said for about 18 months now, I think, Paul, you can agree or disagree.
I can confirm.
That Alpine are 2022 champions.
Yeah.
Like, I've been all over it because I just got this sneaking suspicion when they managed to lure Ricciardo and then they managed to lure Alonso that they thought...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Well, they were confident that they were going to pull a Mercedes of 2014, that they had been working so long on these 2022 regs that, of course, were supposed to come in last year, that they were like, we are surely going to be so ahead of everyone else. We're going to be race winners. Now, they've come out of the box again, another quiet preseason testing. No real kind of signs of anything that special. All I would say is that last year, you know, they did have, you know, Alonso came on strong towards the end of the year.
Yep.
It looked like old Alonso was back. Ocon got that totally fluke race victory and then just disappeared again. So not sure what's going on with him, but can I reveal this? I'll leave him nameless, but I was recently on a plane with a journalist who had interviewed the whole Alpine team.
Will Buxton, obviously.
No, I don't know Will, unfortunately. Another journalist for a piece. And I declared my prophecy that Alpine were going to be champions.
This isn't your conspiracy.
No, No, it's prophecy. Okay. Not conspiracy. Oh.
So this is legit happening?
No.
Is that what prophecy is?
Well, I'm now doubting it slightly. But yeah. I said, you know, this was prior to preseason testing. Okay. This was between Barcelona and Bahrain. And I went, you know, I think they've got something up their sleeves. And he went, they are quietly very confident. They
really?
Give off an air of smirking like they've got something up their sleeve.
Mm.
Now, I don't think that
because they're French.
Do you think that this just constantly just
walk smart. Around with an air of Frenchness?
Shout out to our French listeners.
I have French family, so sure. I kind of get them.
I can be rude about them because I've got French family.
I get the vibe.
They, yes, I don't think they have necessarily delivered on what I believe to be their promise of, well, I made up their promise, but I still have a sneaking suspicion that maybe there might be a slightly different car or something lurking under the skin of that Alpine. And whilst I'm not sure they're going to be challenging for the championship the first five or six races of the year, I think they might be a little bit more competitive than they were letting on. And I think...
You think they'll evolve?
Yes, when we get on to reviewing or revealing what we predict to be the running order to the start of the year, I think you'll be surprised by where our position
okay.
Alpine. Surely Alonso's going to walk all over Ocon this year, though. Like, that's just a given, right?
I would actually hope. I think going into the beginning of 2021, when I was saying that Alonso was coming back to sell T-shirts, I actually slowly starting to warm to the guy. No. I've slowly started to become a bit of a fan.
No.
And I think these guys are helping as well.
Oh, because just because Mazepin's gone, now you're looking for another Dick Dastardly character to support.
Yeah, well, he's been in the sport for a long time and he brings a lot of sponsorship money with him.
Alonso. Yeah, I just can't.
He carries a lot of weight in the motorsport world.
He does.
You've got to think.
He's also a difficult character, as everyone's always said, and I just can't gel with him. For me, it's still too raw. Firstly, Schumacher Alonso.
Too raw.
Hamilton Alonso. And Alonso Vettel, the snoreiest.
So basically,
like
in your lifetime, you'll never get over him.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, you know, Hakkinen, by the time Hakkinen retired for a couple of years, I was like, I love Hakkinen. Even Nico Rosberg, like poor Nico, who I've now met five or six times and spoken to very regularly. I had to say to him the first time I met, I was like, by the way, I hated you for a good 5 years. But like, you get over it. But for some reason, Alonso, I just somehow cannot get over the fact that he's always been the one that I've been going, boom. I just can't move on. I'm sorry, Alonso.
Well, I like him now.
Sure, you're a nice guy. McLaren. Now, again, a team that at the end of last year, I think we had a lot of hope for going into 2022. Mm. They were on this real upward trajectory. Nearly had two victories last year. Had the 1-2 in Monza, amazing. Norris really should have got that Sochi victory. Unfortunate or unlucky with the weather. Now, historically, when McLaren have done that, you know, 1997, for example, they then went on to dominate the years ahead. I don't think they're taking that leap forward, and Bahrain wasn't the strongest test for them. Barcelona, they looked quick. Norris, Ricciardo, Seidel, everyone was quick to say, no, we're not, like, we just need a few more sponsors. Yeah, so don't read into it. And then Bahrain, they said, went the opposite way and had a load of issues, and Danny Ricciardo got COVID. Yeah. So I'm a bit like, oh, what does that really mean for McLaren?
It's hard to analyse.
I think they're going to have a similar year to next year.
Do you?
Last year, sorry. I think they're going to have a similar year to last year. If they get... Maybe they could get one or two victories again. Are they going to compete for the championship? I don't think so at this stage. At this point, I don't think so.
I would agree, but I also have a real urge within me to see McLaren getting podiums. And I don't know. I don't really know why, but I want them... And Ferrari, oh, obviously I know why, because it would be more entertaining. Rather than see the gap close between like the Red Bull and the Mercedes, I want to see the Ferrari and the McLarens get closer to the Red Bull and Mercedes so that we've got like a four-horse race.
2012.
Yeah.
Four teams competing for victories every race.
That's what I want to see. And I think with McLaren, they've got the drivers now. Like Lando is really coming in to becoming this mature. He's found himself leading the field. And yeah, in Sochi, he had an unlucky... weather front. No one can control the weather.
Yeah,
and Ricciardo, we know Ricciardo can win a Grand Prix. Like, he's fully capable of doing that.
And had a strong end of the year. Mm. I mean, you know, I don't think he was quite on Lando's pace. I'm sure he would want more from himself. And I still think that in his day, or on his day, Ricciardo would beat Norris. Mm. I don't think he's there yet. But towards the end of last year, he was coming on strong. So I'm hoping that they'll push each other forward and we'll see Danny Rick getting more and more comfortable with that car and stronger this year once he's gone over COVID.
Yeah. Did you see that Lando was giving Ricardo debriefs of like WhatsApp voice notes at the end of every day?
No.
So obviously Ricardo is self-isolating, keeping himself to himself and not being able to get in the car. So after the at the end of the day, Lando was almost debriefing Ricardo, which is nuts when you consider that, yes, they're teammates, but fundamentally, as we've seen from Drive to Survive and within podcasts, the teammates are probably at each other's throats the most. They're competing against each other the most. And it's nice to see a real team ethos and culture within McLaren. I think that does come from Zak Brown. I think it does come from the top. And to see Danny Rick and Lando, who are probably two of the best personalities within the Formula One grid, working together in a hope that they're going to bring the best out of each other. That's where I see throughout this season, let's say the cars enable drivers to follow closer, because we've got a little inkling, but not that much. Having Ferrari and McLaren a few seconds off the Red Bull and the Mercedes rather than 15 to, I mean, at some point, so Lewis was lapping every single other, as was Max. So,
yeah, I think you're so right. I mean, To touch on the Drive to Survive thing, you know, I think Lando's come out quite quickly and said that he's not particularly happy with how they portrayed some storylines and some narratives. And one thing that they really hammed up was this supposed, you know, feud between Norris and Ricardo. Now, whilst that might have taken a little bit of Hollywood, you know, artistic, what's it called?
Creative license.
You know, anyway, they might have sort of hammed it up slightly. It's not, there's no smoke without fire. So I think at the start of the year, there was not a little bit of tension, but you know, we got to remember at the end of 2020 when it was announced Ricardo was joining Norris, we were like, oh my God, like this is going to be so exciting. They're the funniest guys in the world. They're going to be best mates. And I think they'll be like, guys, we're actually just racers.
Yeah,
like,
you know.
So there was a bit of that. And then of course, Ricardo had that very slow start to the year. But towards the end of the year, I think once Ricardo had got that victory and started to find some performance, and then Norris as well was performing at such a high level, they bonded under Zak Brown, as you said, to see the greater good. Actually, if we can now perform at a level and we can come together and push this team forward, we're all going to succeed. And I think it appears, at least on social media, that those two are getting along a lot better than they had been, or at least they were publicizing before. And you're right, there's this sort of general, a real weird thing, you know, as a 90s fan, thinking of McLaren as this kind of fun, family, cool place, like cool team on the grid is weird. Like they were forever the stormtroopers, like zero emotion, like, you know, Ron Dennis running a tight ship, Mika Hakkinen, like, you know, just anyway. But now they're the kind of team that I almost want to hang out with. Like, even the PR team, we kind of know a lot of their names, and like you see the regular faces, they have personality and character, and I just want them to do well. I'm willing them success, where I wouldn't always have felt like that about McLaren. So.
They feel like a more inclusive team.
Yep.
For the fans.
Exactly that. I think for the fans, they're doing very well. So yeah, I would love to see them as competitive as they were last year, if not more competitive, especially from Ricardo's side. And it would be great if they got a couple more victories. I think that would be
great. Oh yeah, I want to see them right up there. I want to see them right up there.
So we now have to move on to Ferrari.
Shall I? Are you going to do your monologue? Because I'm just going
to. No, you
I'll just sit back and have a little snooze and then come.
Well, okay. So just to bring you up to speed, in case you missed testing, the general consensus is right now, before anyone's really shown their hand, Ferrari are looking the most consistent. I wouldn't necessarily say they are 100% the fastest. Red Bull came out with an amazing upgrade package right on that final day of testing, and yeah, it's hard. It's so hard to know. But across the 6 days of preseason action, Ferrari have looked super strong. So let's assume Ferrari are going to be championship challengers this year. My question to you.
Which driver
could win the Drivers' Championship? Leclerc or Sainz?
I actually think Signs. I just think, having seen Leclerc, overdrive. He's more capable of overdriving the car in situations where it's not necessary. Like either fighting his way through the grid after a mistake. Which, I don't know why he always seems to have problems in Monaco, but he does, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, really yeah. Bad luck in Monaco.
But every single image that I have of Leclerc getting frustrated in the car and overdrive the cars in Monaco.
Yes,
but good point. I just feel like Sainz being the cool operator that he is, I just feel like over a season when consistency is key, if they are both given championship-winning cars, I'd back Carlos.
It's so Prost, Senna, or Hamilton, Button. Like, their methodology is so different. Yeah. You're right. Sainz is a real, comes across as a real analytical, long play driver.
Which I think will frustrate Charles.
Yeah, I mean, I think is also is a hard thing to beat. A guy who can just amass points.
Yeah.
Someone who's just there, ticking away, amassing points. And he's clinical, and he builds throughout the year. We've seen it the last 3 years. Sainz always seems to finish so strong. A bit like Hamilton. It's a very similar Hamilton technique, that, of finishing with the last six races of the year so strong. And that's where you can really clean up on a load of points and gain some positions in the championship. So I don't knock Sainz at all. Could Sainz win a championship in a competitive Ferrari? 100%. But I have been a Leclerc fanboy since his Formula 2 GP2 championship winning year.
I'm not saying that he is not a potential world champion driver.
He's the chosen one. You know, he is the ultimate. And I just have to believe in my heart, give the man that championship winning car, a bit like, was it 2019 or 2020 when Ferrari were competitive? 2019. When did he win at Monza? 2020. Oh, anyway, I'm losing my mind. I think push comes to shove. Race results, qualifying results, Leclerc will just have the edge over Sainz. But I'm so with you that we have seen he's a passionate, emotive guy. Anyway, yes, if for whatever reason he gets thrown off his trajectory, I think Leclerc's easier sort of, yeah, he makes mistakes easier. Yeah. And so
he's easier to knock off his course.
That's exactly it. Or at least from that's what, you know, we've seen previously.
Yeah, so we're such experts. We can talk like that about a Formula One driver.
And you're right. If Sainz keeps his cool head and these guys are literally scoring podiums every single race weekend, I could see it being that Leclerc makes the odd uncharacteristic mistake and that's where Sainz could pull in. But, you know, if you view it as a Hamilton Button, an Alonso, I'm trying to think of really competitive teammates. Rosberg, Hamilton, did I just say that already? Who else have we? Yeah, Senna, Prost. Like, essentially, I think the quicker driver, the raw quicker driver, usually just about comes out on top.
Which would be exciting because that's Leclerc, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah. But hey, if Ferrari win a championship, I don't really care. But because of my love affair for Charles Leclerc, yeah. How would you deal with Sainz? I would applaud Sainz. I would say, oh my God, like, wow.
And you go and order another Ferrari?
Yeah, in Leclerc's paint job. Okay. Okay, so powering on to the top two. Red Bull. Why are they? Red Bull. Oh, because they didn't win the championship. Sorry, Red Bull. Max Verstappen, world champion, and Sergio Perez, as I say, came out with a stonker of a car on the final day of preseason testing. Beautifully sculpted.
Which I missed, by the way.
Ah, okay.
So you're referencing this final day, and I'm kind of bringing a real basic Formula One fan approach to this particular podcast, because as we know, the season's going to evolve. I knew you were going to watch as many minutes of testing as possible, which is why I didn't really.
Fine. You
because
made a good
there's
choice.
Going to be a lot of people that don't really.
I mean, only losers
care.
Watch 6 hours of testing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it means nothing.
Yeah, you've literally got Martin Brundle and Crofty doing these stints in the commentary box with like zero energy, or they're just there talking. Obviously, when you're presenting a Formula One race, it's exciting. Everything's happened there. And they're just there going, so tomorrow, when we're playing golf, are you going to be annoyed with my swing again? I'm trying to change it. Like, as Lewis is like going flat around.
The thing is, it's like watching the warm-up for a football match.
No. It's not even like watching the warm-up to a football match. It's like watching the England team in the training camp 2 weeks before the World Cup starts, of them just doing kick-ups.
Yeah, fair. So the only other reference I could think of was tennis. You know, when they go out for like warm-up and they're just swinging. Like,
No.
Going, oh, God, he's missing a lot of serves.
No, because there's practice courts that you will train on in the morning. If you've got like a 3 p.m. tennis match, you'll literally go to the practice courts.
I'm trying to think when there's more than just one individual, because all the teams are on track. That's the only thing. That's the only reason I'm trying to think.
There's more than one practice court all lined up.
Trying to analyze.
Yeah.
Like something that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
but because of the rate of development, you can at least acknowledge that.
Yeah.
On the final day, it seems to be all the focus is in and around the side pods.
Mm.
So it seems to be a lot of the development is in and around the side pod area. And that might change throughout the year. But yeah, that's...
I think it would change track to track.
Potentially. Mm. You could be so right. And so what happened was... Mercedes turned up to Bahrain with these basically sort of non-side pods. And everyone's like, are these even legal? Not many other people made that many huge changes. But then on the final day, kind of out of nowhere, everyone was like, oh, the Red Bull shutters down. Everyone's been on track for an hour. We can hear a lot of drilling. And these whispers start to sound saying, oh, a B-spec Red Bull car is about to launch. Oh my God, they just put some huge upgrade program. And finally, the shutters rolled open. And literally, as the shutters were opening, Perez like, drives out so hardly anyone can see. He goes around and basically sets a fast lap straight away, straight to the top of the timetable. And it cuts to a shot inside the garage of Helmut Marko. Helmut Marko smiled. That's never happened before, ever.
Oh, wow.
In his own, like, that's never happened.
Yeah.
It caught him and he said he was like, and it was like that Kanye West clip where he's smiling. And he just stopped smiling immediately because he left the cameras on him. So there was something in that lap or that they were like,
it's working.
So Red Bull looked good, very little porpoising. Do you know?
I've been watching all of the explanation videos on YouTube on that.
So the bouncing due to ground effects, like turbulence in a plane, basically. Mm. But because of these new aero regulations, if you don't get the car in the perfect sweet spot, essentially at high speed, the car can, it sort of looks like it's bouncing or shaking because of the vortices.
It's a weird terminology to call it porpoising, because a porpoise is a fat dolphin, isn't it?
But does it go, does it go up and down and stuff?
It does, yeah.
There must be a reason why it's porpoising. But anyway, so yeah, Red Bull seemed to dial a lot of that out. So I think at the end of, again, pointless preseason testing, everyone was like, Red Bull looked quick there.
Mm.
So let's wait and see. I mean, I think it would be very sad if Verstappen couldn't defend that championship.
Oh, but I actually think that the Red Bulls are incredibly confident that they've already got a car that can,
if not get him the double. I mean, you know, I just think after everything we saw and because of all the controversy, if for whatever reason they weren't there, they weren't competitive enough to give him a proper championship competing car, it would just be a bit of a, it would be a shame for him.
Yeah.
And I think for us as the sport, you know, we kind of want to see him come out now. He's got that championship. What does he look like as a champion? What does that mean to him? What's that fight going to be like? So yeah, I'm hoping that he's at least able to compete for the championship in a doggedly way. He might come out and just walk it and he'll just, you know, a new era of dominance from Verstappen, who knows. But I have to say, not a big fan of the design of his one on his car. A bit too fat for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like a slimmer one, but you know, it's my OCD.
You could always submit it into their Twitter.
Yeah, could do. So then finally, we come on to Mercedes.
Now this is where the podcast really starts.
I hope not. Because I don't have a lot to say about Mercedes.
No, I mean, I actually didn't really take too much note from Red Bull or Mercedes, because going back to the end of last year, the way that it finished, coming into preseason testing and everything and seeing on Drive to Survive just how petty everything did get, I'm not actually that interested between Mercedes and Red Bull. I actually got so much of their fight last season that it's I'm oversaturated with it.
I don't
really care about what Toto Wolff's got to say. I really don't care what Christian Horner's got to say. Obviously, I want Lewis Hamilton to win another world championship. But apart from that, I would happily watch Ferrari and McLaren shake things up at the front far more than I'm interested between Lewis versus Max.
I weirdly totally agree with you. I don't think I could stomach another year of Lewis versus Max.
My heart can't.
Well, I just think, I think it's we've seen every variation of it.
Yeah.
There's nothing more to witness in, I mean, we say this now, cut to the end of the year. Mm. We're like, what a season. But yeah, it was so over the top last year. There was so much that happened and it's dragged on. And I'll just touch on one point you just said there. I'm sorry, but Christian Horner is doing himself no favors these days. Yeah.
No, my brother, who is not necessarily a Formula One fan, only really keeps his eye on it because obviously I love it. And he'll message me every now and again. And he's seen Drive to Survive season one, season two. And obviously, Christian Horner is what I'd say is like a fairly warm character in those seasons. And he actually messaged me, I think it was halfway through the season last year, going like, I actually thought Christian Horner was quite nice, but why has he turned into
a petty psycho? Mm. I mean, it's obsessive and it's to the point where it's just becoming so ridiculous. We all want to move on from last year. All of us want to move on. Like, let's just crack on. We've got a whole new season ahead of us. It's so exciting. New regulations, new rules, new cars, everything. And at every opportunity, he is still bringing up what happened last year. Still belittling Toto Wolff. Still moaning about Lewis Hamilton. It's this kind of obsessive narrative that is just like shut up.
And you know he takes that home as well.
Oh my God.
Jerry Halliwell's just sitting at home being like, I'm just trying to make lasagna for the family. Can you shut up?
But also he's like a troll. It's not like it's not like interesting points. He'll come up and be like, yeah, well, Toto Wolff doesn't really know what he's doing. He's just in it for money. He's not really here for that thing. And then he really got caught out, Christian, which I'm so happy about, making that ridiculous comment saying to a journalist saying they're not legal.
Yeah.
And he made it as an aside comment to some journalist who then of course posted about it, and then Ribble had to backtrack and say, oh, he didn't make those comments. And Chris is like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, the whole thing was so uncomfortable because he's just walking around everywhere bitching. Mm. Like, just move on, mate. Anyway, sorry, I had to get off my chest because it's really been annoying me. So Mercedes fundamentally, I'm a bit the same as you, and also classic Lewis Hamilton tactic for the last 4 years. The end of testing, we're really in trouble, guys. This is going to be a really tough season. Maybe it will be.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool if we get to see him fighting.
Yeah.
But until we're 4 or 5 races in, I'm sort of a bit like not really going to listen to it. So anyway, I'm not picking up my phone because I'm bored of you. I'm picking up my phone because the other day in the group, I put my suggested predictions for sort of general pace going into the first race.
Okay.
So I thought we could review that before we make our predictions for the season. Whilst I look for my list, what do you think? I say just the sort of general running order. You don't have to literally say 1 to 10 finishing order. But just who might be fastest, kind of roughly where you would put people.
I would obviously like to see Mercedes collectively faster than Red Bull.
Okay.
So whether that's a Mercedes 1 and 3, because we cannot discount Max Verstappen, obviously, or Perez either. So Mercedes, Red Bull, I don't want to say Ferrari. I'm going to go McLaren, Ferrari.
The rest.
No. I want Aston Martin. I want Aston Martin up there. I'd prefer to see Aston Martin above Alpine.
Okay. Interesting.
And then just like knock the rest back.
I've got Ferrari, I think, are probably fastest, closely followed by Red Bull and Mercedes. Then McLaren, then Aston Martin, AlphaTauri, then Williams, Haas, and Alpine, and Alfa Romeo bring up the rear. All I was going to say very quickly is we didn't touch on the George Russell stat that I really wanted to bring up, just because I love to pick holes in the theory that he's the second coming, because I'm a Leclerc fan. By the way, I have been fortunate enough to have met George Russell. Lovely guy, like super nice guy. Clearly very talented. I never like anything that has too much hype. Like long-term listeners of the main podcast will know I'm not someone who really buys into a lot of hype. I bought an RS6. that's why I mentioned that, because the audience love to remind me about that statement. And Russell for me is a lot of hype so far. So this was the stat that was posted in Reddit, which was the analysis of Latifi versus Russell for the year. An average Latifi's gap to Russell across the season was 0.1 seconds of all races. Average including all races, 0.104. Median including all races. What's the median compared to the average? 0.026. Essentially, he was Latifi was within a tenth across all races for the season. Mm. I mean, and I think people maybe didn't realise exactly how close that was.
Yes, I think there is obviously a lot of hype around George Russell. Last year, there was a lot of noise quite early on in the season as well, because I think it was expected that he was going to get the Mercedes seat. So obviously he was going to have a lot of hype around it, but actually Latifi working away in the background was not blown away by George at all.
For sure.
In the same car. And I think that's what that screenshot kind of
proved
exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I think if they're a competitive car, Russell will win races, will get pole positions, and could take the challenge to Hamilton for sure. I'm intrigued to see how he gets on. So we come down to it. We've got a week to go. This time next week, we'll be reviewing the first race.
Yes, we will.
Of the 2022 season. So predictions for Drivers Champion 2022 and Constructors Champion 2022.
It's really boring. And I actually want to fight myself from saying Lewis and Mercedes. But I'll probably say that because I want to be right.
I'm going to say... You're saying Drivers Lewis, Constructors Mercedes.
I purely want this so that we can then move on to the next era.
So you wanted to win and go.
Yeah.
Just win and retire, man. Yeah. Don't drag this on any longer.
But I do think George will play the perfect driver number two for Lewis. I genuinely believe, I mean, I've said this, and it's kind of a conspiracy that I've said in a few episodes, and I've definitely said it off camera as well, that George this season would have already not signed anything, but agreed to do everything in his power to help Lewis.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's probably a part of it of like, look, you've got a couple more years of apprenticeship here, young Paddy one. You know, like you're on the big team. Take it chill. You're in the dream seat.
Yeah.
And once Lewis is gone, we're all on you. Yeah. So it's a building up process, I think. I'm going to say driver's champion Verstappen.
Mm.
Constructors Ferrari.
Really?
Yeah, because I actually think whilst Mercedes have probably been sandbagging and doing their usual thing, I think Red Bull and Ferrari might just have the edge on them this year. And I think Ferrari will be consistent in the constructors, but will take away points from each other in the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Verstappen will do it. I think he'll double champion, I think.
I think that leads to an exciting season, considering we're both hoping that it's not going to be just a dogfight between Lewis and Max.
For sure.
And I would much rather see so many multiple race winners I would be more than happy to see Verstappen win the Drivers' Championship and a completely different team that isn't Mercedes or Red Bull win the Constructors' Championship. So is that more of a desired? Is that what you
no,
think is going to happen?
No, that's what I think is going
to
happen.
Okay.
What do I want to happen? Leclerc, Ferrari.
Okay.
I love Lewis. I'm a Lewis fan. I'm over it. He's done everything he needs to do.
Yeah.
I don't feel, for me, I have no need or desire for him to win that eighth championship.
So you already think he's the best driver in the world?
Yes. Okay. Yes, probably.
So he's better than Schumacher, good.
I always said, I don't think you can compare eras.
Yeah, I know.
Is Hamilton better than Senna? Is Hamilton better than Fangio? I don't think you can compare eras.
Yeah.
I just don't think having an eighth championship will position Hamilton any stronger than he already is. He's got almost every other single title or record. He's proven his worth against the greatest drivers from different. Like I don't need it. I need a Ferrari championship. I need a Ferrari championship. Okay. That's what I need. That's what I desire.
Is that because you want the value of your car to go up?
Basically,
I've just repainted it.
I'll change the plaque to include 2022 as well as the early 2000s. Anyway, let's wait and see. As I say, this time next week, Paul and I will be sitting down to review or to analyze.
Can we get some new caps here?
Yes, we'll get some new caps for our review of the first race of the year.
And a new table.
No, don't be rude about the table. Anyway.
Just thinking, it's a new series. We could have spruced the place up a bit.
Feel free to find some sponsors. if you are intrigued by the season ahead, if you've enjoyed After Ticker Flag, maybe it's the first time you've listened, subscribe now. If you're watching here on the Behind the Glass YouTube channel, turn on notifications. You can keep following us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. I guess that's all we've got to say for now. So we will see you next week for what will hopefully be an exciting episode. Could be a disastrous procession.
It will be, regardless of what happens. Seeing those cars line up and watch those lights go out is what I've been waiting for ever since Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, it's not felt that long, but anyway, here we go. So yes, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.